Welcome to Conversations in World History. I just released an introduction where I talk about the pre-Columbian Mesoamerican series that I'm doing based on my lengthy conversation with Professors John Schwaller and Matthew Restall, which I divided into three episodes. This is the one where we speak about Teotihuacan, which is one of the most ancient Mesoamerican civilizations that we know about. You can visit the ruins, as I did, of Teotihuacan, which is just north of Mexico City, the gigantic and spectacular pyramid of the moon and of the sun, and the temple of Quetzalcoatl. And here is our conversation with some fascinating insights from both of these scholars. I hope you enjoy.
So what we wanted to do today is take a look at, I have this World History Patterns of Interaction textbook, which is a widely used textbook in world history. And Matthew, you and I have already talked about some of the problems in how it approaches the Aztec-Spanish encounter. And how most historians approach the Aztec-Spanish encounter. But here we want to dig actually deeper and just look at the Aztec and pre-Columbian civilizations themselves. And of course, I want to give the caveat that writing a textbook is probably, I've never done it. It's probably a really difficult endeavor to try to please everyone about everything in all of world history. So it's in some ways an impossible task. But what we wanted to look at is, what does the textbook get right? What does it leave out? And are there any areas where it actually gets things wrong about the Aztecs and pre-Columbian civilizations? And it starts with looking at a couple pre-Columbian civilizations like Teotihuacan. And I'm actually very excited. I'm about to head off to Mexico City for the first time. I'm going there next week, actually, spend a few days, and I am going to visit Teotihuacan. Now, so let's dig into what it says about Teotihuacan. And Matthew, so obviously people aren't looking at the entire text in front of them, but we may imagine a student may have read this entire chapter, and then they can listen to this episode. But the overall viewpoint I see of what it's writing about this ancient city-state is pretty respectful tone about kind of the development of this really ancient civilization. Matthew, what do you see that it gets right about Teotihuacan? Is there anything on your first glance of it that you see that it gets wrong or is problematic about?
Yeah. David, let me say, just before, you know, any of us start criticizing the text, to kind of echo what you said at the beginning, it's not easy to create a textbook like this. I don't know who wrote this book, and I don't want you to tell me.
Okay.
Because it's not personal.
Right.
Right? And the fact is that it's easier to just to be kind of bluntly critical when I don't know who wrote it, especially if it might be that the person responsible for the Latin America part is, you know, someone that Fritz and I know or who is a friend of ours or something. The point is that the people who write textbooks do the best that they can based on the material that's available to them. And if you're writing a paragraph about Teotihuacan, you cannot spend 2 weeks reading all the archaeological reports, right? You are dependent upon what somebody else has done to summarize the reports that have been summarized before that. So it's a lot of it is about evidence. And this kind of thing that we're doing, right, kind of interrogating a textbook, is actually incredibly useful way of thinking about evidence, not about sort of, you know, criticizing other scholars. So to go right straight into Teotihuacan, the Teotihuacan stuff I see is way less problematic than the Aztec stuff. Why? Because the heyday of Teotihuacan was so many centuries before Europeans showed up and started complicating our lines of evidence that scholars are really dependent on archaeological work, right? And when we get to the Aztecs, we're going to see it's way more complicated than that. But the archaeological work, Look, that you know, unless it's a textbook so old that you have, you know, Western scholars saying, well, obviously this was like an ancient time where there were lots of tribes and they were savages and things like that. Well, they're not saying those kinds of things. They're not trafficking in those kinds of stereotypes. You've got things like the population was 200,000. There were more than 20 pyramids. Well, maybe later archaeological work is going to, you know, produce arguments about that, right? Maybe the population was bigger or smaller. Maybe there were more or less pyramids. It's not a big deal. It doesn't. It's sort of fine-tuning our understanding. There aren't ethical issues there. It doesn't kind of change our entire way of seeing this civilization. So might be arguments about little details here and there, but I don't see sort of big red flags in this really early material on the Teotihuacan, or mostly on the Toltecs, but we'll get to that in a minute. What do you think, Fritz?
Well, on Teotihuacan, by and large, you're absolutely right, Matthew. They've done a credible job. It's solid. I think it lasted a little bit beyond 750, as they indicated here. I think there's a lost opportunity in the opening, in the Teotihuacan did not just emerge ex nihilo out of nothing, but in fact was, we are now positive, formed by people from the central basin of Mexico who were fleeing the eruption of a volcano. So these are folks who lived in an area which is now the southernmost part of Mexico City. There's a little volcano down there who erupted and destroyed their way of life. And so they moved further north in the valley and established a new center, which came to be Teotihuacan. So in that sense, you lose just a little bit of the idea that there really is a continuity, not just of different civilizations, but actually also of peoples in the same place, that they moved about 80 miles north to a new location to pick up where they had left off after the eruption of the little volcano.
So yeah, and that's why to the textbooks, when you write a textbook, you are asked by the press to update it very regularly. And sometimes people say, oh, that's just because there's used copies out there and the press wants to make money from the latest edition. Of course, that's true. But it's more about the textbook keeping up with the latest work. Right. So there's an archaeological project in Teotihuacan that's pretty much continuous. I mean, I think there are people digging there every single season. I can't remember which is the team in charge right now, but there's new findings coming out all the time. Mm-hmm. And that may only result in, you know, the addition or a changing of a few sentences. But as Fritz said, you know, if the people who wrote this knew about the latest understanding of the origins of Teotihuacan, that's a couple of crucial sentences that you want to put in there at the beginning, right? Because that's fascinating.
So, and I want to add in, and by the way, so listeners don't get confused when Matt refers to John as Fritz, that's his nickname.
It's my imaginary friend.
As you guys know each other.
No, I got a little imaginary friend right here.
Well, the reality is that I knew Matthew when he was a graduate student because his dissertation advisor was a good friend of mine. And just for the purpose of complete transparency, Matthew was the dissertation advisor of my son. So we have a three generation.
That is beautiful.
We're all related. It's very incestuous. It's a medieval village, basically.
Well, and I have many a student who heads off to Penn State University. So who knows if Matthew's taught any of them? I think that's quite possible. So I just want, just to close out Teotihuacan, and that was really interesting. I want to say one thing that Matt, I think you brought out, which was, we'll come back to, is that it actually gets more and more difficult as we get into the Aztecs, which was very interesting. But also I want to just, for listeners, there's a beautiful image of the ruins in the textbook, right? So we, and of some of the, and a giant sculpture. So
which is not from Teotihuacan.
Oh, interesting.
That's what bothered me, is that sculpture there on page 452 is not from Teotihuacan. It's from Tula.
And how do you know that?
Because I've been visiting there since I was four.
it's very famous.
It's one of the Atlantids that's on top of the principal structure at Tula.
Got it.
They're very famous. They're pictures of warriors. They have this butterfly breastplate.
Yeah.
For those of us who are familiar with the area, it's quite obvious it's from Tula.
Mm. Yeah, and that's probably the authors selected that to go on the next page when they talk about Toltecs. But then the designer who's laying out the pages goes, "Ooh, that looks better if it's just up here." And then they move it without realizing that it matters, right?
Oh, wow. So we're getting some insight into the production process here. But yeah, I think that...
One more thing. The caption writers got stuff moved around as well. I would posit because it says the caption just above that picture says Quetzalcoatl was a god for many ancient Mexican civilizations. And best of my knowledge, has ever proposed that one of the Atlantids is an image of Quetzalcoatl.
No.
So, yeah, and I think clearly they're trying to show and cultivate in the reader the sense that there were impressive pre-Columbian civilizations, right? Yeah. Through the images and the text, and they do a good job with that. And then once in a while, which I think we're going to come back to more and more, the words that they use to describe the indigenous peoples sometimes betray that a bit. And I think that gets more and more over time. But the word that stuck out to me just as the last thing here is they describe the people who built these sites as villagers. And I wanted to ask you guys about that, because at the same time, it's saying there was a population of 150,000 to 200,000 people, which in the ancient world strikes me as a metropolitan area as a city, but yet it's calling them villagers. And again, we're getting nitpicky, but there's a power to the way they choose to describe the
people. You're totally right, David. I don't think it's nitpicky at all. I mean, I think it's patronizing, right? You have to be careful and look for what might seem like the tiniest little indications that this is a way of looking down on an ancient civilization. Right.
And what I was
non-Western and so on.
And what I was trying to point out in the folks who founded Teotihuacan came from an earlier city, which was south of what is now Mexico City. I was actually obliquely commenting on this thing of villagers. Mm. They weren't villagers. These were highly, highly civilized people who had been living in cities for generations, if not quite millennia. So they're
probably cities way more exciting than Albany, New York, if I were to say so.
Well, I don't know. Albany does have the legislature.
Thank you to my guest and also to Colin McGrath for the beautiful background music. You can check out all of Colin's music, including his amazing album Window Seat, on Spotify. You can also take a look at my books, upcoming picture books, materials for teachers, and writings on authentic assessment and other topics in social studies like role plays and mock trials at davidsharon.com. Thanks for joining me today. Hope you come on back.